You're listening to Tahiti Dispatches, a Going to Tahiti production. Hi, welcome to the very first Going to Tahiti Productions podcast. For all of the details on everything Tahitian, check out our website, goingtotahitiproductions.com. Sign up for our RSS feed and get the blog. Check us out on Facebook. And be sure to check back regularly because we have a lot of upcoming events and we'd love to see you all there. All the events will be detailed in all of those places, on the website, on the Facebook page, and on the blog. All right. Hope you enjoy our little podcast here. Thanks.
Hello, this is Patrick Metzger, company member for Going to Tahiti Productions. I'm also a composer, musician, and sound designer. I'm here with Jessica Amorati, founder and artistic director of Going to Tahiti Productions. So Jessica, tell me a little bit about Going to Tahiti. What is the
what
company?
What is Going to Tahiti? From? Yeah. We are a theater production company dedicated primarily to giving more opportunities to women in theater. It's very important to me that we make the distinction between a female voice or between giving opportunities to women, between that and women's theater, because it really isn't women's theater per se. It's we do like men, and, and we have many men in the company.
Me included.
Yes, exactly. So what's important to me is that we get that sense that you know, that women get as many opportunities, whether it's in performing or in writing or in designing or in any aspect, producing or directing, that they get as many opportunities as men. And that's sort of our goal.
That's awesome. Great. So what are some of these past shows and events that you've mentioned?
Well, so we started, our first show was 2008, and we started, when I say we, you know, it was really me in my living room starting this company, and the place the company came from was that I'm a trained theater director. That's what my very useful bachelor's degree is in, and I was directing and sometimes producing off Broadway theater in New York since I moved here in 96. So I had been doing it for about 12 years, and I was getting the feeling that just being a director wasn't really going to work. That as I tried to kind of put my resume around to theaters, and I tried to get the word out about myself and my desire to direct, people didn't really care. I didn't have a lot of options as far as like what shows, like if I had found a script that I really wanted to do, I didn't have a lot of option as far as like making it happen. And I didn't have a mechanism to raise money and to sell tickets and to, you know, I didn't have a business. I didn't have a way to, you know, to get that off the ground. And so I really kind of hit this point where even though I didn't really have an interest in producing, I really just wanted to direct. I hit this point where I was like, you know, I either have to make this happen or I have to give it up. And I knew that in order to make it happen, it would mean, first of all, that I'd have to figure out how to produce because I was going to have to produce my own stuff. Or the projects I was directing, I shouldn't say my own stuff because I'm not usually the writer, but but I'd either have to produce my own projects or, you know, or just say the hell with it and do something else with my life. And in producing my own projects, it became very apparent very quickly that to do that, just like, hey, I'm Jessica Amorati and I want to produce my own project, didn't have quite the same weight as saying, this is my company. This is what our mission statement is. This is what our goal is. This is where we're centered out of. This is what we do, you know, and having, even though it was in the beginning, just me in my living room, having a company name and a company website and a, you know, a company behind you made a difference. And so I started the company in 2008 and did all that stuff. I got a name and I got, you know, I got a website and, and then what I needed was a project. And luckily I have a very, very talented little sister, who writes and she's a musician. And anyone who's seen any of our shows has probably heard some of her music and mm-hmm. has probably seen some of her writing.
What's her name?
Her name is Camilla Amirati. Mm-hmm. And
she's very talented.
She's very talented. Yes. and she had written a bunch of short stories. And I was looking for a project to produce as our premiere production with Going to Tahiti, and I read through all of these short stories and found three that really just spoke to me and I thought were really beautiful, and they had a similarity. Each one had a lead character, and each of those lead characters seemed similar to the one in the next story. And so I talked with her about the possibility of adapting that, or adapting those three short stories into an evening of one acts.
Like a single kind of narrative?
Yeah, or, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it was really, it was three different separate stories, and the lead characters, the lead women were different characters, but they had real similarities to them. And I thought they really explored aspects of, you know, what it means to be a woman and what, you know, ideas of beauty and fear and pain and loss. And, you know, like how do we as women handle those things, but also how do we as human beings handle those things, and how does that change who we are and define who we are? And so I spoke with her, and I basically said, you know, would you be willing to adapt these for the stage? And she said, well, okay. and she did. And that became, I think it was nine performances. The entire evening was called In the Ebb, and it ran for nine performances at the Sage Theater in Times Square, which I think does not exist anymore. But we had a nice run there. And with In the Ebb, a company was born, and that was really our first thing. Basically having the company, I then started to think about, okay, how do we manage to, you know, the goal was always to manage to program a season and to actually have more than just one show a year. And I looked at, how to do that and how to raise money for that and how to make that happen. And it took a little time to get it all figured out. But the next show that we got into was an adaptation of a novel called Dreamers of the Day. It was a novel by Mary Doria Russell, one of my favorite novelists of all time. And I corresponded with her and asked if she would be willing to let us adapt it. And she was very gracious and very kind and allowed us to adapt the novel, and that was in the fall of 2010, and that sort of kicked off a kind of new experience for Going to Tahiti, because it was on Dreamers of the Day that I met the majority of the people who are now a part of the company. So basically what happened was we did this wonderful production. It had 12 performances in late September, early October of 2010, and it was 12 performances at the Roy Arias Theater Center. It was terrific. It was a 5-person cast and an amazing stage manager and an incredible sound designer, and we found our technical director, and basically we had this really unique experience where everybody loved everybody on the project and we really all got along. And after that experience, I walked away from it thinking, how can we make this a more permanent arrangement? I don't want to let this go because it was too much fun. Mm-hmm. And we sort of investigate, I sort of gave some thought to how would I continue this? And it dawned on me that the way I could continue it was that instead of going to Tahiti being me on my couch, it could be a company of actors and designers and technicians. And after Dreamers of the Day, I invited pretty much everyone who participated on the project into the company. And and everyone came on board. And then that led to sort of knowing that still in the back of my head that we needed to do more than one show a year and that we wanted to program a season and we wanted to have a sense of like a plan and a goal. And that led to deciding after Dreamers of the Day in the fall of 2010, deciding that we needed to do something in the spring or summer of 2011. And that led me back to Camilla, and to a script that she had written actually when she was in college. And it was a script that had been written for the stage that she had adapted into a screenplay that I had then shot the first 10 minutes of, you know, to do a short film and my first foray into the film world. And so basically I picked it up again and said, you know, this could work as a play. It worked as a play to begin with. And so, at that point I went back to Camilla and I said, you know, hey, can Tahiti take this project and adapt it and you know, fit it back to the stage from screenplay form. And she not having the time to do it herself, she gave the okay that we could go ahead and do it. And in the spring or late winter, early spring of this year, of 2011, we got together a couple of people who had the time and we started to adapt it and made it into what I think was, again, I'm biased, but what I think was a really beautiful production that we did at the Secret Theater in Long Island City for a 12 performance run. And that was sort of where, you know, where we were going into the summer, but we had clearly moved beyond the me in my living room stage. And then we started going into a redesign phase of trying to figure out like, how do we make this company a sustainable thing and how do we bring it to a wider audience and how do we, you know, keep it going. And one of the things that we came up with was the podcast. So welcome. And then the other thing we came up with was what I had always planned to do, which was this programmable season that was more than one show a year. And for the first time in, you know, since the inception of the company, we actually headed into the season, the 2011-2012 season, with two plays that we know we're going to do and a third that we are likely going to do. So that, you know, that brought us to a new place and we're now, you know, we're now going strong and getting ready for a December production.
That's awesome. Well, so what does the name Going to Tahiti, where does that come from? I know there's a story behind it. So
yes.
I'm intrigued.
So Going to Tahiti the easiest answer to that is that it comes from my uncle. But the longer story behind that is that my uncle was a really cool guy. He was an artist and he owned a bookstore out in California. And having grown up on the East Coast, my uncle was really the only close relative who lived far away. I'm from a very, very large, very tight-knit Italian family, and we spend a lot of time together. And it was always hard to have this one member of the family who was, you know, in California when I was growing up. So when he would come to visit, it was always there. Every time he would come to visit, which was usually like once a year, his visits were always surrounded with so much excitement because it was just like, oh, Uncle Johnny's coming. Mm-hmm. Yay. This is very exciting. And, he would always come to New Jersey, which is where my grandmother lived. And my family would come down from Connecticut and we'd go to New Jersey and we'd spend the week like hanging out with Uncle Johnny and just catching up. And one of the things that Uncle Johnny always would do when we first arrived was he would give me and my sister, me and both my sisters, airplane rides. And, you know, he'd put his arms out and we'd like lay across his arms and he'd fly us through, one at a time, he'd fly us through my grandmother's house. And my grandmother's house had, it, you know, it like sort of, you could circle around from the living room into the kitchen, into the bedroom, into the hallway, back to the living room. And so you could go in this circle, and that's what, it was always very exciting. We, you know, we'd barely let him put his suitcases down, and we'd come running in the door, and we'd like stand up on the couch in order of our ages. So my big sister got to go first, and then me, and then my little sister for the airplane rides. And we would just wait in anticipation of our return to get flown around the house. And, you know, what I remember is being 6, 7, 8 years old. And I remember he would fly me through my grandmother's house, and I would honestly believe there would be a moment in every airplane ride when I would honestly believe that we would turn the corner and we would no longer be at my in my grandmother's house. And one of the things that he would always say as he was flying us through the house was, "We're going to Tahiti." And it was, I have no idea why it was Tahiti. I have no idea why, you know, like why that was what, I didn't even, at the time, I had no idea where Tahiti was. I didn't know, you know, I just, it called up pictures of sand and beach and palm trees and something very exotic and very different from what we were experiencing in this house in Lakewood, New Jersey. And every single ride, there would be at least one moment when I would turn that corner and I would think, it's not going to be the living room. It's going to be Tahiti. Like, we're going to somehow have been transported. And yeah, I was like 6, 7, 8 years old, but it was such a feeling of excitement and wonder and a feeling of possibility that I think as adults we don't really have anymore. And so when I had formed the company and I was trying to think of a name for the company and what we were going to do and what our goal was going to be, and around the time I was figuring out the company and the specifics for the name, my uncle passed away suddenly, and my dad, who's his brother, my dad talked to me and he said, you know, is there any way you could honor your Uncle Johnny in the name of the company? And he said, you can do it however you want, but it would just be nice. And I thought, when my dad said that, I just thought, of course, like, how could I not? You know, I mean, my Uncle Johnny, being an artist, was somebody who always encouraged my artistic endeavors, even from across the country. And he was, you know, he was always sending me ideas of you know, movies to go see or plays that I should see or books I should read or anything artistic that would help with, you know, with my artistic knowledge. And so the thought that, you know, that he could inspire the name of the company, it just made perfect sense. And so as I was trying to think of what it would be, the first thing that came to mind was those airplane rides and that feeling of just the possibility in, you know, being flown around the house. And so I thought, okay, so it's going to be going to Tahiti Productions. And then I had this one moment of doubt where I was like, maybe that shouldn't be the name of it. I don't know. Let me check with my sisters. And I called each of my sisters and I said, so I came up with a name. And to each of them, I said, I'm naming it after Uncle Johnny. And each of them said, going to Tahiti? And so I was like, okay, I guess this was the right name. Uh-huh. And so that's, you know, that's what we became. But I mean, the thing I really love about the name, I mean, I have very fond memories of those airplane rides, but the thing I really love about the name is that it is exactly what I, as a director, am hoping for the audience to feel in that moment when the lights go down and the show is about to start. I want them to have that moment of just, you know, anything could happen. You know, we could be in the middle of the desert in Egypt, which is what we did in Dreamers of the Day, or we could be in the middle of a cantilevered house in upstate New York, which is what we did in Skin, Flesh, Bone. But, you know, that idea that you just don't know what's going to happen when those lights come up and the show starts. And I love that feeling. So it ended up, in my opinion, being a really perfect name.
Cool. So what's the plan for this coming year?
So this coming year, we have a couple of things already planned. and then a couple of things that we were potentially planning. So basically, we know we have two shows that we're going to do, two shows we're definitely going to do this year. The first show is called Full Disclosure. It's a one-woman show written by a playwright named Ruth McKee. And it's this great, fun little one-woman show about a very pregnant realtor who is trying to sell the audience a house. And that's what, you know, that's what the play is. It's her, you know, it's basically an open house and there will be cookies. So, you know, by all means, please come and join us in December. Yes. For Full Disclosure. And we will be performing December 6th through the 18th at the Secret Theater in Long Island City. Details and tickets will be available on the website, going to TahitiProductions.com, probably within the next week. And in order to gear up for that, we're going to be doing a season kickoff party, which is going to be November 11th. And that tickets will be available at the door, and that will be at a place called Sidebar, which is a really cool little bar restaurant in Union Square. So if you're in the neighborhood on November 11th, 5:30 to 9 o'clock, that will be going on. That will be our sort of kickoff event. Yes. So that's our fall, winter show. And then we're currently working on an adaptation of the Jane Austen novel Persuasion, and that's a company adaptation that we're doing. And, the plan is for that to be probably in March, and probably, again, this hasn't been worked out definitely yet, but probably at the Secret Theater in Long Island City where we did Skin, Flesh, Bone. We have a really great relationship with those guys there, and it's a really great space, and we're really looking forward to kind of playing around in it for Persuasion, which will, similar to Dreamers of the Day, we'll be using sound design and projections and movement and all manner of artistic tools to bring the story to life. So those are the Full Disclosure and Persuasion are the two shows we know about. They're the ones that are definite. We are also in negotiations right now to adapt another novel, which, because the negotiations aren't finalized, I'm not going to give any details about it. Sure, sure. But the plan for that would either be late June, July of 2012, or it might be pushed to the 2012-2013 season, and it would be our fall show next year. So, but either way, we know we definitely have two shows this season, possibly three. And then we also know that, that we'll be heading into the 2012-13 season with a real plan, instead of just like bumbling around and going, oh, what do we do now? Sure, yeah. Hey, we'll do a show. So having a programmed season puts us in a kind of new place as a company, which is very exciting. We want to branch into offering workshops, and we want to branch into sort of one night events that would be, you know, a cabaret here and there, you know, that kind of stuff. That would just give us a presence at all times, because my 5-year plan is world domination. And so world domination means we've got to be present all the time. Mm-hmm, so that will be goal. And then who knows, you know, I mean, I would love for Tahiti to do film. I'd love for Tahiti to get into, you know, into like a web series. I'd love for Tahiti to do music. The ultimate goal would be to be a sort of Sundance of the East, and, you know, to have art of all different types that's on display and that's in performance, and that's, you know, a destination for people to come and see a lot of new emerging works. So that's our ultimate goal.
Cool. World domination.
World domination, exactly.
No big deal.
No, not at all. I don't know. It's part of the 5-year plan, so, you know.
Uh-huh. In, like, the bylaws.
Yes, right? Yes, in the bylaws.
So tell me a little bit more about yourself,
about
Jessica.
Me. Hey. This is, by the way, my favorite topic of all time.
I'm sure.
Jessica Amaral. Yeah. She was born a poor girl in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains. No, I was not born a poor girl. I'm from Connecticut originally, and I'm the daughter of two college professors. I already mentioned the large, close-knit Italian family.
Right.
I have mentioned my husband, so I'm married. no kids. And I have honestly been a director my entire life. I didn't know that was what I was until I didn't even know that was a job until probably around junior high when I started, I would watch movies and I knew I would see direct, I could read. So I would say, oh, this person was a director, but what that actually meant and what a director actually did was something that I didn't really learn until junior high. And I was, I was involved in drama club and theater from, in elementary school, like from the very beginning, but I never wanted to be on stage. I don't like performing and I get terrible stage fright. I'm amazed that I've been able to talk this coherently, or maybe I'm not being coherent, but I think it's relatively coherent. But I'm amazed that I'm holding out this long right now. But I always wanted to be involved in theater. I just never wanted to be on the stage. And it wasn't until I guess in high school I directed a one act in high school and kind of got the bug a little bit and was like, ooh, this is kind of fun. This is kind of interesting. I kind of like this. And then it was in college that I really started to realize and identify myself as a director. That was when I started to realize what a director really did and realized that it was something I really enjoyed. And that not only was it something I enjoyed, but the more I do it, the more I realize it's actually, like, in my opinion, the reason I was put on this earth. Like, it's the thing I do, and it's who I am, and it is a thing that fulfills me in a way that nothing else in the world does. And so I was always, I was always doing it. I was directing with my, when I would play with my sisters growing up, and I would tell my big sister exactly how she was supposed to say those words in the particular game of, like, Cowboys and Indians or Cops and Robbers or actually probably Battlestar Galactica that we were playing at the time. Nice. And, I was a director when I was seven and she was 10 and Camilla was one and we would have the baby be, a Cylon or something. And
right, a seated role.
Yes, exactly. Something where she didn't really have to move much. But I didn't, like I said, I didn't understand what the job was or what it could be until I started directing in college. And then I went to the National Theater Institute at the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center my junior year of college. And that was really, before I had done that, I knew I wanted to be a director, and I had directed small things, but it was at Eugene O'Neill at NTI that I really started to see myself as a director because other people started to see me as a director, and I had one instructor in particular who just pushed me in ways as a director that I didn't even know existed, and then to finally start to explore those ways and then to realize that I could do that on every show I ever worked on. And that was just a thrill. So, So I came to New York. I graduated in 94 and then sort of tootled around the country a little. I went to LA and I went to Atlanta and I lived in both those places for a little while. And I really wanted to direct film and would still love to direct film, but I had no money. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, I'm not a writer. And in today's film climate, and particularly in the mid 90s, the film climate was such that, it was the writer director was taking over Hollywood and still pretty much it's like, you're some upstart writer who has this really great script and then you hold out so that you get to direct it and then you become Quentin Tarantino, and I didn't have that great script. Because I didn't have any money, I decided that I should maybe go back to my roots in theater and really explore that and see if I could make it as a theater director. And then I could always transition over and do a film here and there, you know, when I wanted to. So I ended up in New York, and I do love directing theater. There is something about, you know, that opening night, you know, I mean, I think with film, it's always the directors, because, you know, what is on that screen and what you see, what the audience sees, is what the director wants you to see, unless they don't have final cut, in which case it's, you know, the studios, but it's what, you know, the goal of film is for this one person's vision to be what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And you can direct that in a very particular way in film. One of the things that I love about theater is that it is my vision, but it's my vision as interpreted through the hands and minds of the actors and the designers and the technicians who execute the show on a given evening. And that can be different, you know, on a Tuesday night than it is on a Wednesday or a Thursday. Mm-hmm. And that is a real thrill to me. And I do like, as much as it breaks my heart that I don't have, you know, videotapes or I'm dating myself, that I don't have DVDs of the various productions I've done. I also, as much as that breaks my heart, I also kind of love it that it's a transitional medium. It exists for the time it exists, and then it's done. Mm-hmm. And you can have fond memories, and you can have photographs, and you can have friendships that never die that have come out of it. But that thing itself is gone forever. And so it makes it that much more valuable in the moment. And I do love that. So, I've just started doing theater here and have been doing it now for 17 years, something like that, a long nice. Time. So that's sort of my, you know, that's my artistic life. That's my soul. Hmm. And then I also need the way to pay the bills, which every artist in New York is very familiar with. Mm-hmm. And the way I have found the thing that I do that pays the bills is I'm a doula, which is a birth assistant, so not a midwife, not an OB, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't do anything medical, but basically I when a mom goes into labor, she calls me and I go and I support her in the labor, and I'm there for the duration. And that has been an incredibly rewarding way to make a living, you know. Mm-hmm. When I'm something that allows me to still pursue the theater to the extent that I wish to, and still allows me to fulfill that desire and that need to be a director. But it also, the job of being a doula and of helping people bring babies into the world is an incredibly rewarding way to spend the rest of my time. And it's really, you know, it's not sitting in an office pushing papers around a desk and wanting to tear my hair out, you know. And if this, you know, if going to Tahiti only goes this far, you know, if it's only a couple of podcasts and some photographs of some great shows we've done, you know, I won't look back on my life and think, oh, well, that was a waste. No. You know, I'll definitely feel that, like, the artistic pursuits are worthy and valuable and important. And I'll also feel that I've helped babies come into the world, and that I've been there when you know, when a new person like comes into the world. I mean, it's just it's a kind of mind blowing thing when it comes right down to it. So right now that's how I split my time. I help babies be born, and then I direct a play.
You help a play be born.
Yes, I help a play be born. Right, first the babies, then the play, then the babies, then the play. It's a whole thing. So
cool.
Yeah. So that's a little. That's me in a nutshell.
Nice. So, do you have anything else you want to leave the listeners with?
I do want to just remind people that we do have this event coming up November 11th at Sidebar. Tickets will be $15 at the door. There will be a whole bunch of drink specials as part of the thing, and we'll be doing a little, we're not sure exactly what, but Kiwi Callahan, who is playing the role of Sunny in Full Disclosure, which is the show in December, Kiwi will be at the event and we'll be doing something Full Disclosure-ish. So whether she's actually doing an excerpt from the show or just talking a little bit about what it's like to play the role, we haven't decided yet. Sure. But the way you find out what our decision is to show up on November 11th, 5:30 to 9 o'clock at Sidebar. And details will be on the website as well.
Which is
www.goingtotahitiproductions.com. And in fact, like that might be where people get the podcast. So my guess is they'll know how to find
it. They'll probably find it.
In case they get it somewhere else. It is goingtotahitiproductions.com. I've been told you don't even need the www anymore. So very exciting.
I can confirm this.
Woo, very exciting. Yeah. And then the other thing I want to remind people of is that Full Disclosure will be coming in December, and it will be a show with very limited seating. So you'll want to get your tickets early. Mm. Yeah. But I think that is everything for now.
Great. Well, it's been great talking with you, Jessica.
And you as well.
Great. And thank you to everybody who's been listening.
Yeah, thanks for bearing with us for this this first podcast. And there will be more podcasts to come. The next one will most likely be in late November, and we'll feature the aforementioned Kiwi Callahan. And she'll be talking about Full Disclosure.
Well, we look forward to it.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.